Here at Early Excellence, we specialise in early childhood education. We offer expert advice and guidance through training, consultancy and classroom design. With the Early Excellence podcast, we aim to inspire and support you as well as challenge your thinking. So if that's what you're looking for, you've come to the right place. Hello, everybody. Welcome along to episode 165 of the Early Excellence podcast. In this week's episode, we're joined by Lizzie Battersby and also my colleague, Nova Robinson, as we explore a new Early Excellence resource designed to boost early language and communication through play. So here you go. Here's my Early Excellence podcast chat with Lizzie Battersby and Nova Robinson. We're going to be talking about all sorts of things to do with communication and language, and specifically we're going to be talking about the Early Excellence Going Home Discovery Bags, which are new and very, very exciting. So on that subject, on Going Home Discovery Bags, Nova, you've been involved right from the very beginning on the Discovery Bags, on the Going Home Bags. So tell us about them, first of all. Tell us about the development of them. Tell us about the vision for them as well, if you wouldn't mind.
So our Going Home Bags that we've had for a good number of years consist of basically a lovely clear bag, and usually with one book in it and a prop of some kind, maybe a puppet, a small world animal or something to go alongside that. And the concept behind those was always about adults sharing, adults in a setting, but adults at home in particular, sharing these with the children and having those props alongside the book to kind of prompt conversations, retelling, the kind of the added dialogue that you want about books between adults and children. So they had always worked really effectively. We sell them in small sets. We sell them in larger, complete areas for different age groups from 2 all the way up to 6. And then it was really, we'd have kind of conversations and lots of us going into schools about, you know, language and how that's a priority, developing support for parents and families working with children. And also from one particular local authority, we had a request as to whether we had anything that we could send out as on a large scale to support the links between settings and home. So that's when we decided to go back to the Going Home Bags and see if we could really develop those and extend what they do. So that's where the idea of Discovery Bags came in. So what you have in a Discovery Bag, which again, we start with from birth. So we have Discovery Bags for babies, for 2 to 4 year olds, for 4 to 5 year olds. And actually some of those 4 to 5 year olds sets would be really appropriate for Q Stage 1, Year 1 in particular. It's really a wider collection of resources that really prompt that open-ended exploration and conversation and play between adults and children. So within one bag, you might have 2 books, you might have a set of shapes or small world resources, some other resources. So there are so many possibilities. And I think the lovely thing about them is that they're not scripted. It isn't a task for an adult to do with a child or a parent to do with a child. It's a way of that adult following the child and seeing what comes from it and really how that play and that conversation and all those ideas evolve. So that's what we were looking at, and that's what we developed, our Going Home Discovery Bags for from birth to 5, 6 year olds to really kind of develop that play and that conversation. So that was the starting point, really. And then we really wanted somebody like Lizzie to just to tell us how they went, really, to see if they were useful, to see how they worked with children and with adults, and then moved on from there, really, which is why we're delighted to have Lizzie talking about them today.
Absolutely. So Lizzie, you were invited by Nova to trial the materials and the resources, and we're going to talk all about that. Before we do, I think it'd be really interesting to know about your school setting, if that's all right. Could you tell us about your school setting, your community? Give us a kind of a context, really.
Okie dokie. So I work in Roe Marsh, which is in Rotherham. I'm part of a nursery school federation, so we're Royal Marsh and Arnold Nursery School Federation. So we're two quite large maintained nursery schools. We're both situated in lively but quite deprived communities. Some parts of our catchment actually being in the 3% most super deprived super output areas in the country. I personally have been here for 20 years, starting as an NQT, moving right through to deputy head, and recently joining the local English hub as well as an English specialist. So, you know, lots of different roles through that time, been out and supported other settings. So having that lovely overview of what's happening in the area as well as just in our two nursery schools. We are graded as an outstanding setting and have been at Royal Marsh for our last three Ofsted inspections, recently gone through for another one at our Arnold base. And that sort of grading doesn't happen by accident, really. We put a lot of a lot of time, and we give a lot of time over to keeping current with what's going on and reflecting on our own practice, being part of sort of research projects. For example, we were involved in a reading research project last year with EFE, the University of Durham and Sheffield. So we're quite forward thinking, but we also really know what we value, what we really hold on to, and what's really important for our children in our settings. And one of those big areas, as Andy's already said, is looking at sort of language skills for children. That's always on everybody's minds, but it's been something we've looked at for a long, long time here. We've really analysed where our children are in our school and what their language skills are like and what we can do to support that. And we've seen quite a worrying decline, certainly. We've tracked children's language levels since 2012 when we started as part of the ECAP project then. And we've seen from then, we used to have around 37% of children not where they should be for understanding of language. Last year in 2024, that was up to 68%, which is a really worrying decline, and something that you know, we were already aware of, but when you're getting numbers like that, you know, that doubling, such a relatively short period of time, we've got to work extra hard almost to sort of bridge that gap for children. And the Discovery Bags plays into part of the things that we're doing for children. So we've kind of ourselves sort of tracked that really and linked that up to the advent of the smartphone, I guess, for us. 2012 we've got 37%, 2024 we've got 68%, not where they should be. And I think you only need to look, you know, the Literacy Trust say that in 2013 only 1 in 5 people have got a smartphone, and then as of last year 4.5 people have got a smartphone, you know. So that in itself, when you think, well, that doesn't impact on small children, but actually it's when we're talking about bags for parents.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
you know, we're
absolutely
talking about parents and parental involvement, and particularly with these children at this point in their life where they're developing communication skills. We know that parents are increasingly on phones and missing those little moments where you can be talking to children. You drive around in the local community, you see mummies pushing prams but scrolling on the phone at the same time, and that little moment of talking about the birds or the trees or the man who's gone past on a bicycle, those sort of seemingly inconsequential language moments, actually, they will all add up together, aren't they, to give children that at least that very basic language. And I think that's what we're not seeing. We're seeing children coming in without basic nouns, without basic prepositions. You know, we used to teach words like piglet and calf and foal. Now we're teaching pig and cow and horse. You know, so we're not getting onto that extra layer of language almost for children. We're going back and teaching the basics that children previously would always have sort of come to us with, and then we'd embellish and broaden. So, sorry, I've gone down a wormhole. But
it's all good stuff, this. It's all good stuff. You're right, though. It's about the strong foundations, isn't it, of language. That you're right, though, in previous years, actually, if you felt that the children were coming in and they'd already got some of the foundations, the starting points in terms of the names of farm animals or the names of different vehicles or whatever it might be, that actually you've got something to build on there. You can have a conversation, you can understand what something is and then how to build on top of that. But without that, that's incredibly difficult, isn't it? If you take away that first starting point, you're already really up against it, I think, you know, just within And obviously that's happened within a few years.
I think the thing is, isn't it, as well, it's not just even this language. It's, you know, we're talking and thinking about characteristics of effective learning, and we're wanting children to start to link ideas together. You've got to have that mind's eye picture, haven't you, of an experience you've previously had, and the words help you to create that mind's eye picture and then link those events together. The language is what links it all together. So you can't sort of have your ideas and talk about your plans or relate it to a previous experience if you've not got the language to do that and express that. And as practitioners working with children, it makes it really difficult to know exactly where they are when they can't, you know, they can't write it down for us. Their language is how they show us what they know, isn't it? You know, it has impacts all the way around. You know, this using phones and screens to pacify children in places like supermarkets and restaurants, for example, like going for a meal or whatever, children are on phones, they're not learning those sort of basic social skills about communication.
Say, yeah. It's the relationships, isn't it? Impact on relationships, all of those things. It's so vast.
Yeah, and you know, we could take it on and on, can't we? You know, children who were put on iPads and slumped on settees, not getting those physical skills. We've sort of seen that. We talked about communication, but actually it's that all the way around, like Nova's just said, it's the social interaction is impacted, and relationships with parents is impacted as well. You know, that time spent with your children is so important. And I know we've talked previously about some, you know, when I first started here, our communication things that we looked at was, can we get rid of the dummies? Who's still got a dummy? That's really damaging. And let's not watch too much TV. And I really do sort of almost say, watch some TV together, talk about the program, because at least you're in relationship and there's some shared dialogue over something. If you're watching a television program together, you know, you can do that sort of, you know, Greg Bottrell talks about book snuggling, which obviously is, you know, exactly what we want, that lovely book snuggling moment. I guess you could kind of have TV snuggling, I guess, as well, but it's better than being everybody on iPads.
It's simple things done well, isn't it, in lots of ways. It's the kind of the simple things, the enjoying being present together and enjoying that time together, yeah. Whether that
just
be on a walk to the park or just to the supermarket or wherever it might be, even just a walk in school.
Putting the washing machine, it's just day-to-day shared experiences, isn't it, that are so important.
Well, yeah, because you would just get a pair of socks, wouldn't you, and say, can you pass me a spotty sock? Can you pass me a stripy sock? It just happens. So, and that's what happens in nursery. That's what we do with children in nursery all the time. But we need that for going on at home. But I think that's really interesting what you said, Andy, about being present. That is the key, isn't it? Not just occasionally joining in and then going back to the phone. It's that put the phone away and be absolutely wholly present for your child, even if it's just 20 minutes to be in play with them, you know. And we have the luxury of that, don't we, in setting. We don't have our phones in our pockets when we're working. We've, as a setting, moved away from iPads. We're not constantly snapshotting children's every breath because it was interrupting that beautiful flow, that back and forth, that certain return you have in wanting communication with children, and practice is all the better for it.
So as a setting that are very open to working with different people, as you've said earlier on, when the resources, because you trialed the resources for us, didn't you, in terms of the going home discovery bags, when you did so, presumably you saw something in them that you thought, actually, do you know what, this is going to help our families, this is going to help our children. Tell us about your initial impression of the materials and the resources in the bags.
I think they sort of they sang our song, really, just as soon as you look at them, because we are a setting that has been really committed to sort of Reggio Emilia type approaches for a long, long time anyway. We've always sort of really subscribed to the idea of atelier. I know it's called Loose Parts now, but that idea of open-ended resources, whatever that might be, collections of them, and providing them to children, seeing what they can do. We've seen some amazing things from children, just be like washers and steel offcuts, children who wouldn't be in those traditional continuous provision areas for creativity, you know, easels and painting or the workshop. We'd seen those children when they're not hampered by those sort of skill set you need to operate in places like that, like scissor skills, create all sorts of things. So, you know, going back to that I've just said about the steel offcuts and the washers, a little boy who never, ever, ever went in those areas made this fabulous train track out of the washers and used the steel offcuts to make train trucks, and brought so much knowledge to bear on this creative moment. Was engaged for so long, he was there for with it, and we see that time and time again with those sort of resources. And that lovely collaboration, actually, that you get as well with those sort of open-ended resources. So, for example, we had something similar going on in the garden a couple of years ago. It was sort of, I think, loosely based around the Hungry Caterpillar, but children do what they want with things, don't they, to a good degree. But these two boys just ended up making a caterpillar that spanned the width of the garden, and our garden's huge. But so many children were involved in it. It became this whole maths thing as well, where children were end-to-end seeing how many children it took to get them into the caterpillar. All this lovely learning came just from some open-ended resources. So when you look at a bag like the Discovery Bags, you're straight away going, yeah, this is it. This is what you need, because you know that if you give those to a small child, their instinct is to start creating, and they will start making something. So even if mummy and daddy haven't perhaps got an idea, or they feel like, oh, they won't need to, because the children will just go with it. We trialled them first in setting, and the children did all sorts of different things. So they have, some of them were playing shops with them. Some of them were acting as if certain, if you pressed different colours, you could turn people into different things. Some children took them to the light box and were exploring the colour paddles alongside. Some children took the books. So they were just straight away, and we gave them to the children with no agenda whatsoever, and they just, as they do, went. And it was off, and then that feeding of ideas off one another that sort of starts to happen. So we knew, we were pretty confident, if we gave them to parents, hopefully, if parents just give that time, that 20 minutes, and that's kind of what we advise, really, just to be with the child, see what they do, see how they play with them, and follow their lead, then hopefully we get some, and obviously we got some great feedback from parents about them, some fabulous photos, and using the resources in all sorts of different ways. But we particularly liked as well that the toys are, they're different from the sorts of things that you were getting in the shop. So they're not really toys, are they? That, you know, we would call them resources because there's no particular purpose to each of those items. It is what the child wants it to be. And, you know, that's where you've got that creativity. So,
yeah, you're right. And they're not fixed, are they? They're not one particular thing. So it's not like you say, a toy for me would be something that is usually quite fixed. So it's a police car, or it's a fire engine, or it's a boat, or something like that. Whereas many of these resources are, as you said earlier, very open-ended. So they are more like a kind of a collection of resources for learning, rather than something that is purely for, might be purely for entertainment or something else. Or it's certainly not fixed in that way.
Yeah, and I think that there's always that lovely thing with early excellence resources. They're always high-quality materials. We know that. We know they're practically indestructible as well, which is always really important, especially when they're going backwards and forwards from home. You know, they're in and out of cars or on and off buses, so they need to be, don't they, as well? And people have dogs in their homes and all those things. But there were just so many endless possibilities for sort of imaginative play, for lines of inquiry. They were just fantastic. And I think they're not made of plastic as well. I think so many toys that we see now, there's just tons and tons of mountains of plastic with children having in the shops. And these are beautiful wooden objects that are just so tactile and lovely to hold for children as well. Really just lovely. Not that weight to them, that difference in the weight, but also that sort of neutral, the gender neutral as well, which I think we see increasingly sort of in the toys that we see sold in the shop. So if you're buying something for a girl, it's pink and purple. If you're buying something for a boy, it's blue and it's black and it's bright. It's all these macho sort of stereotypical colours. And I think just if you look at, certainly when I look at toys from my own childhood, I think that's become, we've almost gone backwards a little bit with that, haven't we? We've got this stereotyping that didn't happen when, and if I bought Lego as a child, we got a set of Lego and it was all loose, all bricks again that were open-ended. It was just a set of bricks, all different colours. Whereas now you buy a set that's got a fixed, something that you make at the end of it, and it'll be pink and purple because you're a girl. And therefore you must like pink and purple.
And then it doesn't get broken up again. It stays.
It's
a different thing, isn't it?
It's a different approach, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a limitation to that, isn't there? That, yeah, children can follow instructions and all those great things, but there's a limitation there compared to when I used to sit there with my two sisters, the thousands of different things we would make with just a box of bricks. There's so much more possibility for creativity and innovation in the child's play. And not frustration either, because sometimes you know, you can't find the brick that's next, or you've managed to drop that brick and it's scattered to the four corners of your house somewhere, and then that's it then, isn't it? That model is done with, of what, you know, got down a bit of a Lego tangent here, but it is that it's that children need to be able to be creative and to follow their ideas, and I worry about that sometimes with some of those commercial
books. Yeah, no, you're right. But it's as you said earlier on, it's one of those natural interests and instincts of young children is to create, isn't it, and to express themselves in some way, in whatever way that might be. And I think if we give children materials and resources that don't enable that to happen, then we don't encourage and nurture something which actually is a natural interest or a natural instinct of young children, and we miss out because of that. So the resources and the materials that we choose are important, I think.
Yeah, I think particularly as well, we're sort of on this precipice, aren't they? I mean, I could never sit down and play because of my job, obviously I do, but I remember being played with as a child. But I worry that if, and then you take that into your own play with your own children, and obviously in my role I do as well, but I worry that where we're now perhaps getting a generation of children who haven't been played with because parents are maybe on phones or engaged with that world, and children are being pacified by being put on a phone with this constant click, click, click bait. What happens then? Where do we manage to break that cycle moving forward? Because then those children will grow up not knowing how to sit and play necessarily. So then we will become a society that doesn't know how to play, maybe loses some of that creative thinking, that all those things that you know, talk about. Malagutsi talks about 100 languages of the child. Are we narrowing the number of languages we're exposing children to in some of the things that we're providing for them, and not being present, not in their play with them?
No, absolutely. It's a scary thought, isn't it, that natural cycle of playing with children, and that when you're playing with children, what you're doing is you're modelling how to parent, that if that cycle breaks, that actually that's something that is fundamental to society in lots of ways, isn't it? That actually, you know, each generation you could potentially find that actually, you know, that gets diluted each time. And that's, yeah, that is a scary thought.
Yeah, because play is everything, isn't it? Play is where we practice relationships when we're adults. Play is where we make rules and negotiate all those things. And that starts with parents, doesn't it? You know, the first time you don't let your child win a game is a teaching moment, isn't it? All that playfulness. And, you know, we talk about social emotional health, and play is so important, isn't it? As adults, we all want to play at the weekend after we've done our jobs. And that's the same for children. They need that play. And that's where all those little pathways are lighting up in the brain, and actually then we've got this ugly research from all the neuroscientists starting to say we're shortening these synaptic pathways because they're on these things that are just click, 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 and there's never that concentrated moment of immersive learning and playing, just being and exploring for exploration's sake, you know.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. It's something that I think lots of people are concerned about, definitely. So in terms of the materials and resources then, you introduce them into your room, first of all. So could you give us some examples of what the children did with the materials? Would that be all right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think the first thing to say is how long they stayed and played with these resources. There were children who were there for a good nearly 2 hours just working with these resources. And the grown-ups, our grown-ups, we do a lot of work with our grown-ups for our quality interactions and the importance of tickling play and enhancing play, not taking over play. So just offering a little bit of commentary or having a wondering moment out loud. So the practitioners were really hands-off in this moment, just those odd moments, and the children were able to check in, and there was someone there for them to talk about what they were doing. And the grown-up could maybe ask that next question or provoke another idea, but they weren't in control of it. The children were absolutely in control of it. And they sort of, they went, almost broke off, but followed new little ideas with each other. So one of the children, they got a little brick with it, a green insert in the middle. And that was a magic wand, you know, and that was just made this little tiny brick into one, and it didn't really look like what I would consider a wand. You know, I'm thinking Harry Potter and the Elder Wand. To me, that wasn't, but it was to her. And I suppose that's the magic, isn't it, of these open-ended resources. They become other things. Children have that fabulous capacity for seeing it as something that we don't anymore. But yeah, so that and the language between each other as well. There were two chaps who took like different coloured, looked like magnifying glasses, I guess, different coloured perspex circles. Took those over to the light box, and they were laughing and giggling and stacking those on top to make different colours, and looking through at each other. Just the playfulness between the two of them was just gorgeous to see. And I think for me, though, it was just that concentration of being there for so long. Children sometimes that we might think, oh, they need lots of help to stay on task and to concentrate, but we're there for so, so long, and bringing other children in as well. And yeah, you could just see, if we send these home, then we're distilling a little bit of that into this bag and sending that off home, and hopefully getting that. And actually, you know, you open-ended resources, then you start to look at that. If there's older brothers and sisters at home, so even if parents perhaps haven't got the time to sit, that older sibling will get involved, and because they are open-ended, so they can stagger it however they want it, really. Mm. Yeah.
And can I just ask at that point then? So from your experience, if a setting was then to start sending them home, it sounds like it would be really useful to let the children have explored them first, so that the child goes home having done the exploration, has confidence in what, you know, is ready to kind of go with all of their wonderful ideas, rather than sending it cold. You know what I mean? Is that something that makes sense?
Well, we did exactly that. but we also, I put together a bit of a leaflet about some tips for when you're playing with the children. I actually found that really hard. You know, when you try to write down,
yeah,
play
without structuring it too much.
Yeah, I didn't want to put down do this. I didn't want it to be do this task, build this, or whatever. I didn't want to do that. So then how do you put that down? You know, because to get to the point where I am in my teaching, and where a lot of my colleagues are, we have done so much training. You've got so much experience working with children, and we're still learning. So how do you give that to somebody who might have only been a parent for 2.5 years and say, that's exactly what you need to do? So without also being condescending and patronising. Yeah, and also be mindful of for some of our parents, school, even nursery, is a really scary place. You know, it has not been a good place for some of our parents. Building trust with them is hard, and they'll almost shy away from that task because they might get it wrong. And we don't get it wrong. And even putting a leaflet in is almost tricky because we know as well. And we've also got some low levels of literacy as well. So you, there's so many facets to think about in it, really. It'd be nice to have them on a stay and play day, I think, moving forward, to have them out as part of a stay and play day. And then, you can take it home after you finish the stay and play day, where we could maybe do some practitioner modelling in front of parents. But you don't want to narrow it by doing that either, that parents think that's the only way you can play as well. So when in the leaflet we kind of almost went down a bit of a route of just a few talking tips, really, because the talk is what builds the interaction, isn't it, and the play, and getting the child to talk about. So we had sort of crystallized a little comment that I didn't realize they could say so much from one of the parents. And when they brought it back, and I thought, that's it. It's nailed the reason for doing it. and actually, it's obviously been, it's working. So, yeah. But it's complex. The supporting parents is such a complex issue. It's how we, it is, the bag's great and that's lovely, but it's how we support and introduce that as well, moving forward, and nurturing the parents with that. Yeah.
Absolutely. And is there a plan going forward in terms of, you know, you've got started with sending some of those bags home. Are you looking to build on that? You know, what will that look like over time? Is there a vision for it?
Yeah, I think the certainly the stay and play day idea is something that I want us to build on. We already have quite a program. It sounds really intense, but we do. We have a program of stay and plays with different themes, because we're always sort of trying to address that the importance of playing with your child. That's why we do stay in play days. It's not just about coming and looking at us. It's about us giving tips. There are always things that could be done at home. So that's the premise for us anyway with those same play days. So let's bring in the bags. Let's see where we could bring those in. And I think I'd ideally like to do one at each of the play days. So, for example, tomorrow, actually, we're doing at what we call a World Explorers play day. So everything is outside. It's sort of probably school type activities, but things that can be done at home. So it'd be great if we could find a way of fitting some of those bags in into that and then sending them home. I've been using, you know, they almost lend themselves to like land art type activities, some of the bags and the contents in that. So we could, you know, model that as an activity and then send the bags home with people. But I think, yeah, that's certainly for us, but we could, I'd like to do this as well. We did something similar with Early Words Together, which was a project we did with parents that came from the Literacy Trust. When we invited certain parents to come in, parents that we knew were quite vulnerable, we knew potentially had sort of low literacy levels at home, and we did a lot of work with those parents, and it was absolutely really powerful. We built really great relationships with those parents. And we saw attendance improve through that. We saw interactions from parents with practitioners improved as a result of that work. And as soon as you get that, then you get that knock-on effect led to the things that go on at home when they're coming and talking to us. So I'm tentative about this because I think you have to be careful how you manage it. But I'd like to try and do a bit of targeted work with particular families as well. See if we could do a sort of longer program, the series of bags that we might send home to certain families. I don't know.
That sounds really powerful. There are so many different ways, aren't there, that actually you could use those materials and resources to kind of build a bridge with parents, that you can use it as you say, as almost as part of a kind of like a sort of transition process. You could use it as a kind of an introductory process to kind of really getting off on the right foot, that starting point of what are we expecting here in terms of how you engage with your children. You can use it in terms of with vulnerable children and families. Building confidence and building relationships. You know, I think that's right at the heart of effective early years practice, isn't it? And I think used well, I think those materials can do that.
I've not really talked particularly about the book in that as well. The book, the fact there's a book in is so important as well, because we were really fortunate in Rawmarsh. We were part of Rotherham bought into the Imagination Library, which is part of Dolly Parton's work around the globe. And it was partially funded by the authority and by Dolly Parton. So when I first started, every child in Rawmarsh would get a book every month. So by the time they were five, they got 60 books. You know, that is just a phenomenal. And unfortunately, with the way the world's gone, with all the financial pressures that have sort of come down from government, that's had to go. And that's a real shame for our children. We've put things in place like the library. But to put it in a little bag with some toys, and it just really heightens the importance of story, doesn't it, for families? And these books are still so important. And yes, you can read a story on an iPad, but it's not the same as tucking in. And I've said that word already, but book snuggling. Greg Bottrell talks about it. That's it, isn't it? Book snuggling, opening that world through a story, exposing them to words and things that they might never see in Rawmarsh, they might never see in school or in the supermarket, you know. That there straight away, you're broadening language without even trying, but you're also building that lovely attachment relationship with parents, isn't it? And that back and forth again, and all those things that we want children to feel and to have just through that book, never mind the beautiful open-ended resources as well. But then you can go and play when you've read a story. But yeah, I think they're just such a beautiful, they're so beautiful, and there's so many things that can come out of them, and it's almost like we're gonna have to prize them out of our practitioners' hands because they are so lovely and delicious and in a nice bag.
That's such a joy. As somebody has the lovely job of, you know, working with my colleagues to develop product and put things together, and actually at the, well, let's put that in and that in and three of, you know, all of that, to see it kind of brought to life by, or to hear about it brought to life by your children, it is just amazing. And actually it makes you think, okay, so now we can do this. It kind of gives you other possibilities as well. I mean, it's just, that's exactly what you want, isn't it? You want to see anything that we do as adults who work with children, you want to see the impact on those children and their families. You know, that's what it's all about, isn't it? But to see those relationships between you and families growing as well. And also for some of those parents, presumably, their own confidence in themselves as a parent, if that makes sense, and how to parent and play alongside, I think is so significant. And like you said, for some of our parents and families, school and settings can be threatening. But if you've got this kind of link, which is about play and discovery, and where there isn't a right answer and there isn't a homework sheet and there isn't a list of things that you have to have done by your time your child reaches a certain age, otherwise you've failed kind of thing, I think it's going to do so much more, I think.
I think just to give somebody a beautiful resource like that and to say, we trust you to take this resource, you matter enough to us and your child matters enough to you, to us, for us to send this resource home with you. It's everything. It's those intangible things in that nurturing, the openness that we want to foster as a setting. You're spreading that out into the community and opening those relationships up just through something so simple.
Yes, absolutely. In terms of the going home bags and going home discovery bags, there is information online, but and we, you know, have started putting out things on social media just at the very kind of starting point of that about the bags. But Nova, can you tell people how to find out a bit more information?
Yeah, if you go to the Early Excellence Shop site online, and then you just, it's in within indoor resources, literacy and maths, and then within that you'll find all of the going home bags, but you'll also find the going home story bags, which are our original ones, which was the book with a prop or two. And then you'll find the going home discovery bags. And as I said, it's all those different age groups that they're aimed at. So hopefully a really wide range of opportunities, though enjoy, I would say. But I think hearing about them is just brilliant, Lizzie. I can't, you know, it means such a lot to hear about your children and to get that picture in our heads of how children responded and the joy they have of looking through some coloured paddles to see what happens and what their friend looks like when they look through the green one or the yellow one. You know, that's just amazing to get that feedback.
It is. It's very rewarding. I haven't been directly involved, but Nova, you've spent a long time developing the materials, and to go from that planning stage of what's going to be in there and why, and then hearing directly back from Lizzie all about actually the children who were using those materials and how those materials were used, that's really powerful.
It really is. Yeah, it is.
It's brilliant.
I think it's what we expect though from Early Excellence, Andy, isn't it? It's always our go-to with anything. If we want something or we need something or we want a book for that, you know straight away you bring up Early Excellence, because they're going to, if we've thought of it, you've already thought of it first. You know, that's kind of, and that is the reality.
Well,
that's lovely.
I'm very pleased that comes across.
Feedback is always, we value feedback so much. You know, it's so lovely to hear.
Definitely. Nova and Lizzie, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. It's been brilliant to chat to both of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.